history recorded.
Thank you for the opportunity to present a history of the Triangle development and the big campaign which fought vigorously to ensure its eventual defeat. In the best historical traditions, this could be regarded as partly, at least, an oral history, as events moved so quickly that we missed opportunities to document them, rumours abounded, and emotions overrode circumspection on many an occasion. I endeavour to present a timeline of the Triangle saga, and also the birth and development through adolescence to maturity of Unchained St Kilda, another of those noisy and driven community groups for which our city is famous. It has been a good opportunity to sift through a mountain of press cuttings, emails, recordings, council documents, legal assessments, reports and memories. In hindsight, it makes both sense and causes much amazement at the same time. My thanks to Christina Kint, Unchained publicist and archivist extraordinaire, for the records, and Serge Toman for his wonderful photos and excellent memory. Tracing the Triangle saga, as we call it, from the beginning, in the year 2000 or possibly a bit earlier, ideas for a revitalised foreshore from West Beach to Shakespeare Grove were floated and debated. Of the 9 areas considered for redevelopment, the Triangle site has proven the most controversial. The Esplanade Alliance, a group triggered by the proposed development of the Espy Hotel in 1997, had, by then, taken on a watching brief for the whole Esplanade and its immediate environs. It oversaw the redesign of the sea baths, the rejection of a 38-storey proposal for the Espy, and became a key participant in the consultation forums about the St Kilda foreshore development. From 2002 to 2004, to enable these considerable changes to the foreshore to take place smoothly, amendments were made to both state laws and to the City of Port Phillip planning schemes to ensure a smooth passage of the development. These changes for the City of Port Phillip involve a new urban design framework, or UDF, which was incorporated into the planning scheme to provide a reassuringly firm governance structure to oversee the proposed development. It required, in the process, it took away the community's democratic rights of third-party appeal, as required by the state government and agreed to by council. It's important to note that the removal of these third-party rights was and is alarming. In this case, the community was assured that the UDF plan and implementation could be trusted, so therefore, appeal to VCAT would not be necessary. As well as this, a special use zone was introduced over the Triangle site that would outline permitted and prohibited uses. Also, a development plan overlay was introduced, which would require an applicant to lodge a development plan for the use and development of the land before any specific permits could be issued. At the state government level, a new act was brought in called the St Kilda Triangle Act. This was needed to confirm and resolve issues of land title, leases and reservations over the Triangle site, a key component of the St Kilda foreshore development, and grant council control over the site and commercial development to be permitted on Crown land. Under the new Act, leases could be extended beyond those set out in the Crown Land Reserves Act, and it designated the City of Port Phillip to be the community of management of the reserved land, and again, I repeat, in consultation and partnership with the City of Port Phillip, third-party rights were removed. This was the first time they'd been removed in our council area from residents on a project in this particular area. But even at this time, bills were ringing. At the time, Councillor Dick Ross, then Councillor, and other councillors repeatedly assured the public that, and quote, the scrutiny that people feel they may have lost through the VCAT is nothing compared to local, state government and community scrutiny that will be applied to this project. However, the local activist group, the Esplanade Alliance, was not convinced and told the local paper on May the 24th, 2004, that fast-tracking development by removing the community's rights to the St Kilda Triangle unprecedented step. The council is asking for the community's trust that did not have a good development record, citing the St Kilda Seabow and Metropole St Kilda Station developments. The Age newspaper was also sceptical, writing in its editorial on the 15th of July 2004. The next centre of the battleground looks set to be the triangle next to Luna Park that houses the Palais Theatre, the Palace Nightclub and the car park. Mayor Dick Gross hopes that a developer, and they quote, will make enough from a boutique hotel and other investments to pay for fixing up the open space. But this approach has alarmed residents, who fear that a commercial investor will place private profit over public interest. Given the grandiose fees developers have had for St Kilda, their skepticism is understandable. Now, fast-forwarding to 2007, the Age's musings prove correct. Despite Mayor Gross's letter to the editor at the time, promising that St Kilda's heart isn't being ripped out, nor is there likely to be a prolonged battle over its future development. The new planning rules won't allow a monstrosity. This was in response to messages sent from Unchanged and Kilda at the time. So, with these new local and state laws now in place, how could the forceful development be postponed smoothly? This is actually how they were implemented. Firstly, St Kilda Edge Committee was created to establish a governance structure for facilitating and managing the expression of interest and tender process, and to oversee the redevelopment of the triangle site. This was in recognition of the perceived lack of independence of the council in being both the proponent and the planning authority. Two, a series of public forums was held to reassure the community that the vision for the triangle site was in accordance with expressed community wishes. These wishes, as published, were for a reinvigorated public entertainment and cultural space, including a renovated Palais Theatre and a new neighbouring public plaza, in brackets and in parentheses, piazza. Potential uses include a dance and music venue, cinema, galleries, a bar or nightclub, hotel, reception and conference facilities, and some retail. The stress there is minor. And we, council, have defined the word plaza as being more like a piazza. That is, think open space and people walking and enjoying the sunshine and great views. Our comment to this was, there was definitely no conception of wall-to-wall retail or a fountain gate-sized shopping mall. In 2005-2007, the veil of secrecy or the tentacles grow. However, as expressions of interest were called for in 2005, the vision promised to the community changed to include a strong economic focus, which had never been articulated as a primary goal. In addition to a reinvigorated Palais Theatre, the Triangle now should offer residents and visitors a variety of entertainment options in keeping with the site's traditional views. Therefore, shopping is an entertainment, though now it is welcome and legitimated. Commercially, the Triangle should create jobs, attract visitors and bring business to St Kilda for years to come. And this did not appear to be part of the UDF. Aesthetically, the Triangle's architecture should complement and enhance our unique foreshore, upper esplanade and heritage listed palais. No problem with that, but mega architecture to house all the previous requirements. This shift to job creation and bringing business to St Kilda rang alarm bells in the community. Such imperatives were considered more suited to an industrial estate or commercial business park than a beach playground on Crown land. 16 expressions of interest were received by council. Their proposals for the site have still not been shown to the public. The legal challenge from the outgoing Palais and Palace lessees delayed announcement of a shortlist until late 2006, by which time rumours were running rife that the outcome for the site would be a giant shopping mall. Three bidders were finally chosen to go to tender. While council repeatedly assured the community, including the Esplanade Alliance and a new group initiated by local traders, Save St Kilda, that these tenders would not be retail intensive, as rumoured, the request for proposal or tender documents was not made public despite repeated requests from community groups and individual residents, and details of other consortia applications still have not been seen. 2007-2008, the winning bid. At this time, June 2007, the Palace nightclub burnt down a few days after the previous operator's end of lease. This fortuitously both cleared the site and enlarged the car park in one go. Amidst growing discontent, the winner, a consortium of financiers Babcock and Brown and property developer Sitter Proprietary Limited, was finally announced in May 2007. It was accompanied by an artist's impression of the shopping and entertainment complex, with some 180 shops and multiple nightclubs. A development agreement was signed between Council, the State Government and BBC. This is the Babcock Brown Consortium. This agreement, which outlines legal and financial terms and conditions of the development and the obligations on each of the parties, has not been made public to date, despite numerous requests and a Freedom of Information application. August 2007, Unchained and Hilda leaps out of the waves and comes to the rescue. At a meeting at Leo's, about 12 people, most of whom had not been involved in previous actions or groups, met to plan a major campaign to stop the development in its proposed, expanded commercial form. This was a spontaneous gathering in response to some urgent and furious emails. This group became Unchained St Kilda. The community activity from this point was initiated and driven by this group, Unchained St Kilda. At the same time, the public was invited in small groups to information sessions that devoted most of the time to developer presentations. Many concerns were raised, yet none were ever acknowledged by Council, which continued to promote the Triangle Development Proposal as a huge success on its website, in the media and in its newsletter. The response in the community, residents, traders and visitors, was a mixture of shock, frustration and disillusionment as Council's PR machine waxed lyrical about the design whilst glossing over growing concerns and indicating that little would or could be changed. It was, we believe, a done deal. October 2007, the development plan unveiled. Dissatisfaction within the community exploded as the true scale of the proposal became apparent. First explosion. Sitter Proprietary Limited organised a noisy meeting at the Palais Theatre to explain its project to the public. The large audience's reaction ranged from hostility, derision, fear, shock to disbelief. The developer, Stephen McMillan, allowed Unchained St Kilda 5 minutes to present its side. Applause, whistles and cheers were as loud as the boos and catcalls heard before. A very partial crowd, which must have given the developers little cause to believe that their project would proceed smoothly to completion, despite the council being in their pockets. Second explosion. Inspired by Unchained St Kilda, more than 7,000 individually written objections to the plan were collected or sent to council, arguing that the UDF, the document drafted in good faith in the early days of the process, had been ignored on many levels. In response or reaction to the post-explosion debris, council appointed an independent reviewer of submissions, who found that opponents' submissions had significant or considerable merit on several points, particularly 1. The development plan was inconsistent with the outcomes and vision sought by the St Kilda Foreshore Urban Design Framework. 2. The extent of retail and commercial development was excessive. 3. There was a loss of iconic landmarks, particularly in relation to the western side of the Palais Theatre. 4. Views from the public domain would indeed be lost from the upper esplanade. Nevertheless, this advice was ignored as Council argued against the findings of its own independent review. The UDF, that urban design framework which was to provide a safe umbrella under which the development could be brought to fruition, the UDF guidelines that were once hailed by Council as safeguards were now dismissed as merely aspirational. The key objectives of the UDF one's promise is achievable and desirable, one are deemed to be in conflict, requiring the preservation of important views to be sacrificed for multiple new structures. December 2007. The decision to approve with modifications, or reject the development was deferred by Council on the 13th of December in front of more than 900 people. Unchain delivered those 7,000 submissions to this meeting. Also about this time, there were rumours in financial circles that the BBC partner and financier, Babcock & Brown, was in trouble, as were many big investment banks. Some of us held just a little hope that we were not the only ones who might bring the triangle down. February 2008. More than 3,000 people marched from the Palais to the Town Hall, where they heard the development approved with some modifications, with the Mayor holding a decisive vote. Even the 7,500 signed petitions we presented to her before the decision failed to move her. Two councillors voted against the development. The audience was angry, heartbroken, and at times unruly. August 2008. A development agreement was signed between Council of State Government and BBC. This agreement, which outlines the legal and financial terms and conditions of the development and the obligations on each of the parties, has not been made public to date, despite numerous requests and a Freedom of Information application. Unchain spent $30,000 on FOI requests to obtain the document, on which the Ombudsman's report, when we eventually received it, just 3 weeks from the time of my speaking, was heavily critical. We intend to request the Council to return our funds. Soon after the decision, Unchain commenced legal action against the Council. We could not take legal action on merit because those community rights to appeal had been signed away. We were able to take legal action on process of approval only. We lost this case. The judge found, however, that our claims had considerable merit. For example, what was approved was different to the original proposal. It should have been advertised, the UDF was not respected, etc. We came up with dignity, even though we lost. We could not go to the next stage because it could only have been the Supreme Court at great expense and risk. So this was the end of any legal action we could take. BBC had tried to reclaim their costs from us at BCAT in a later hearing, but the case was dismissed. 2008-2009, the fallout. The fallout from this decision was immense. First, the purge of the council. In a democracy, the government cannot change the people, but the people can certainly change the government. At the November 2008 elections, Unchain St Kilda and community group Community Action Port Phillip sealed and or supported candidates in all wards, except one. Five of the seven councillors were replaced. Two of Unchain's candidates, Serge Chaman and Jane Tuzo, were elected. Of the five defeated councillors, the Mayor, Janet Cribbis, and former Mayor Dick Gross were defeated. Both of these councillors had continuously talked up the marvels of the Triangle Plan. It was Dick Gross who, as Mayor in 2004, reassured the public about the Triangle process. In the local paper, the Emerald Hill Times, on the 12th of May 2004, he said, "The scrutiny that people feel they may have lost through the DCAT is nothing compared to local, state government and community scrutiny that will be applied to this project." In The Age, on the 17th of July 2004, he wrote, "St Kilda's heart isn't being ripped out, nor is there likely to be a prolonged battle over its future development. The new planning rules won't allow a monstrosity." So these words, which I have repeated, came back to haunt him. Two, in January 2009, Port Phillip's CEO, Mr. David Spoke, a key driver of the St Kilda Triangle development, had resigned. As chairman of the St Kilda Edge Committee, he had steered a secretive tender process for the St Kilda Triangle that resulted in an outcome that bore little resemblance to the community's expressed vision and expectations. As CEO, He oversaw a development plan approval process for the triangle that failed to reflect the advice of independent consultants, the submissions of thousands of citizens, and the key objectives of the planning guidelines. At the time of his resignation, his administration's handling of the St Kilda Triangle development was the subject of a parliamentary committee of inquiry, which referred the matter of the triangle tender to the Ombudsman, and his administration's handling of other tender contracts, the subject of several other Ombudsman inquiries. More of this later, quotes from this report. In June 2009, regime change. The new CEO, Kay Rundle, her organisational restructure had led to the resignation of other key triangle proponents, and by August 2009, a new senior management team had been appointed. The secret triangle decision-making vehicle, the St Kilda Edge Committee, disbanded, and the officer-driven triangle project control group overhauled. Also, in June 2009, the DCAT judgment on an unchanged case came out on the first day of Kay Rundle's engagement. So the development was no longer held up by our legal action. Now council could find ways out, or to stop this development as they had vowed at their election. 5. December 2009, 1 year after its inauguration, the council delivered on its election promises to stop the triangle. They organised to buy the developer, BBC, out for $5 million over 3 years and the lease of the palace. June 2010, discredit. The Ombudsman's Public Lands Inquiry report was released. Identified among many other damning findings, there were indeed conflicts of interest, naming councillors Gross, Ray and CEO David Spokes. There was a lack of transparency. There was poor procurement and poor contract management issues. And there were indeed behind closed door changes. Now, let's go back to that night in August 2008, at that meeting at Leo's, which led to a determination to tackle this big problem. We may have been unaware then the array of skills and experience which came together that night. After a couple of hours, we had a webmaster, a business writer skilled in dealing with the press, an expert in publicity gigs, a person with very good contacts in a variety of networks, particularly show business, a highly experienced architect planner and pioneer urban activist, a veteran of the Etsy Hotel and Seabart sagas, a superb photographer, and the nucleus of a large and dedicated group of foot soldiers, or to say nothing of two unstoppable inveterate writers of letters to the editor. I also think we had a name that night. Unchanged St Kilda was a response to the invasion of the chain stores, the absence of which is one of the great attractions of our old suburbs. A few months later, we also had lawyers, financial backers, entertainers, artists, journalists, fundraisers, and more of those dedicated supporters and foot soldiers, a wide and enthusiastic and furious cross-section of the St Kilda community. We did not, however, have an organised and formal structure until early 2008, when we started to write agendas and minutes and eventually became incorporated with Serge Tamman, the first elected president, a true grassroots beginning. So how we conducted our campaign? From the first, quite chaotically, responding immediately to events and provocations as they unrolled, never sure of what the results of each action might be because a new one intervened. We set out to do the following: to inform and empower the community, to undo the "it's a done deal" conviction which had paralysed the community, to publicise the issue, to attack the proposal and the flawed process behind it, and to reduce the size and commercial nature of the development. So we needed information outlets, publicity, money, and influential friends. In short, we needed to make a big noise and tread on a lot of toes, make a nuisance to achieve our ultimate aim Well, even that was unclear. At first, most would settle for a reduced development, but as the community gradually came to the conclusion that this was completely unacceptable and it should be scrapped altogether. We set up a website, constantly updated, a supporters database and email list, and a Facebook page. These electronic tools were absolutely crucial in the success of the campaign. We now needed to alert and invite the community to come together, but first we have to identify and articulate our objections and take action as we could. So now, what was proposed for our favourite piece of Crown land? In leading the fight to save the triangle for future generations, Unchained St Kilda identified several completely unacceptable, crucial aspects of governance, that is, the manner in which the whole process was implemented, as well as specific elements of BBC's accepted initial and final proposals. Some elements of the design were deleted or modified on the final proposal. Here I list the community's major elements of concern and or fury and a brief expansion on some of them. On governance issues, one, it was on Crown land. The Crown Lands Act states that commercial activity may exist to support the primary use of the land, not to be a use in itself. The Triangle site is prime seaside Crown land for which a highly intense commercial development was proposed and then approved. The Council was both the proponent and the developer. This represents a conflict of interest which has already proved to be irreconcilable with the concept of a fair and independent process. Council had lost our trust through its secrecy and lack of independence. Our action on this and the Crown land issue, we made a submission to the Upper House Parliamentary Inquiry into the uses of Crown land. The report, which was referred to the Ombudsman, eventually found that there was a conflict of interest in the triangle process, as I have already explained. The effect of this gave us publicity and weight to our campaign and vindication of our beliefs. 3. Our third-party rights of appeal were legislated away. With formal approval of our elected councillors, this was paternalistic, insulting, undemocratic and discriminating. It is a wound which still hurts. There were many elements of the developments which trashed the UDF. 1. A cluster of nightclubs for 3,000 patrons, a pub for 900 patrons, plus further space for over 2,000 seats in licensed venues such as bars and restaurants, including a restaurant to train hospitality students. All this at the edge of a residential area and at a time when community, state and federal government and social bodies were already expressing alarm at the developing binge drinking culture and its social costs. 2. It was a dinosaur, too big and past its use by date. The whole concept was outdated and based on unsustainable practices regarding health, climate change, consumerism, changing attitudes to the environment and energy use. Only one thing could be worse than a huge seaside shopping mall and booze venue, and that would be a white elephant version of the same. It seriously proposed two levels of underground, that is, below sea level, car parking, when councils around the country, including City of Port Phillip, were already planning for rising sea levels and consequent inundation of seafront land. 3. It included over 23,000 square metres of shopping, which included 20% national chains and 50% independents, defined by the developer as a trader with less than 10 stores, as well as a 3,600 square metre supermarket. This was a vast oversupply of retail when local traders struggled through the winter months anyway. There were 3 supermarkets already in St Kilda, with 3 more on the other side of the highway. Our action. We commissioned our own report on the commercial implications of the retail element. It found that most retailers in Aston Street would lose income for the first 5 years. This meant that most of them would not survive. 4. An 1100 space car park. The development was clearly intended to be a major traffic generator, the already heavily trafficked Dacre Boulevard being the point of access. Traffic is a problem in the growing city, but here was an open invitation to celebrate chaos. Action. We commissioned a consultant to comment on the developer's traffic study. The council had not bothered to commission its own. The consultant found that the new traffic conditions would be even worse. 5. 5,000 square metres of public grass areas on the roof of the complex, sloping up from the upper esplanade. This represented alienation of views from the upper esplanade caused by a huge change to the distinctive topography of the site and by intrusive, bulky structures. 6. The Palais Heritage. The Palais was built as a standalone theatre on a large site, has never been hemmed in by other buildings, is a significant council St Kilda building. Under the plan, it was to be hemmed in on two sides to a height of several stories. Action. We commissioned a report from Australia's most renowned heritage architect. He affirmed this view and considered that it must remain freestanding as was intended. 8. The Palais Restoration. It certainly is overdue for a complete restoration, but we maintain that costs should be met by the owner, the state government. The developer pointed out his position. He needed to make money, and the more he spent, the greater the return he needed. Free of the expense of restoring a huge heritage building, and also cleaning up a toxic site, he could do a less intensive development. This is a fair point, which leads to the whole issue of public-private partnership. Action. We organised a widely publicised event to draw attention to this issue at the Palais. 7. The area allocated to house an art gallery and a cultural organisation of national significance was placed to block views of the Palais from the upper esplanade. Though a nod towards culture, it was clear that the building could be modified to offices if a major tenant could not be found. 8. A large, bulky smokestack disguised as a restaurant was placed on the upper esplanade, the first large commercial structure ever on that site, and a crass statement of values to be left to future generations. At one end you have a clock tower, a philanthropic gift to an earlier community. At the other, a monument to Mammon or Bacchus or both, probably with major signage attached. Fortunately, following a loud burst of incredulity and ribald laughter at a public meeting conducted by the developer, this monstrosity did not make it to the final approved plan. We also wrote directly to the architect of our deep disappointment at his apparent and uncharacteristic insensitivity to the site, among other things. 9. And the final point, public walkways throughout, public steps leading to Jacka Boulevard and a shop front at the public plaza. These elements looked smart on the design. It was unclear how they would be managed and at whose expense. The mall model or the public streets model? Large burden on future councils or a race bonanza? So that was all about informing and empowering the public and attacking the proposal. Now we needed publicity. To win wide support and continue to develop confidence on our side and doubt on the other, we developed several simultaneous strategies. We called public meetings. We distributed postcards and leaflets in letterboxes and also handouts in the St Kilda area and close by streets. Several drops over the next year. The first leaflet was handed out in September 2007 at the farmers market. One councillor who was attending the market became very aggressive. We sent off a constant stream of press releases and follow-ups on what we, the council, and the development were up to. Local papers' coverage was crucial. My press file stops before the council elections and it contains 261 items. We dispatched countless letters to the papers. We developed relationships with particular journalists. This was very effective, particularly at the Age. We sought opportunities for interviews on radio and TV. These reached a wide audience and spread the message to other municipalities. We became to be seen as effective leaders able to inspire others in their campaigns. We arranged events to create photo opportunities. We had a rally to fund the Palais, a town hall rally, banners along the upper esplanade, the Queen delivering the deeds, back to the hurt people in St Kilda, and these all achieve major TV and daily press coverage. Providing a celebrity helps. The Queen, aka comedian Jerry Connolly, Rachel Griffiths, Mocha Mora, Slava Gregorian, the late Frank String, aka Michael Carmen, Dave Hughes, Bruce Springsteen, the Rolling Stones, Paul Kelly, Ross Wilson and others helped our campaign in various large and small ways. We blitzed talkback radio. This is a quick way to reach a wide audience. We commissioned products to provide visual effects. Our logo, banners, posters, postcards, t-shirts and election material seem to be everywhere. We encouraged the documentary filmmaker to record the campaign. This will provide retrospective publicity which will encourage other activist groups. The film is now being edited down from 100 hours of footage, has funding from Film Australia and will be premiered in 2011. To do all this we needed to raise a big pile of money. We organised lunches, concerts, trivia nights and film screenings. We sought donations, including on the website. We sold a line of Unchained wine with specially designed labels and wine selected by a well-known Melbourne sommelier. We produced limited edition artist prints. Local artists Mocha Mora and Grover Vine each donated an image for reproduction. We raised enough to pay for all our costs, including our big legal costs, and retain a small bank balance at the end of our campaign. And we offer enormous thanks to all of us, who supported this campaign. We also needed to lobby government directly. In an attempt to get the state government to take responsibility for this debacle, we lobbied local state MP Martin Foley without success, with meetings, and we decorated his office window with dozens of coloured messages, but we met with nothing but indifference. We had several meetings with local federal member Michael Danby, who was shocked and unaware of the scale of the development. We encouraged well-known artists and musicians to write to the Arts Minister, Peter Garrett, about the history and importance of the Palais. We effectively brought about amendments to an Act of Parliament which had already passed through the lower house. It would have prevented any future councillor from voting on an issue on which he had ever signed a petition. Had this law been passed, it would have made our new councillors impotent. In conclusion, now we would like to believe that we have lifted the community's mood from dejection to hope. We've provided an example to other communities that they could fight and win against their governments. We have demonstrated that community voices are powerful and will be heard if loud enough. We have formed new and enduring relationships within the community. We trust we have raised awareness about the importance of good governance and how easily governance can be ignored and debased. We sincerely trust that the City of Port Phillip is now operating openly and transparently, and that we will never again see these high standards slide. We have seen all our convictions confirmed, our concerns vindicated, in some cases at the highest levels. Now we look forward to a beautiful, well-used and admired new place of leisure on our favourite site. But as a curious item, which I introduce as an aside at the end of this talk, I'd just like to comment that you can always benefit from a little serendipity. When Babcock Brown Corporation was chosen in May 2007 as one of the consortium partners, it was worth $10 billion. When the development was stopped, BBC was bankrupt. Their shares had gone from $36 to a few cents. If we were that David, well, Goliath was really just a dressed-up pussycat. Thank you.